Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. My name is Janelle Varley. As Lainey mentioned, I work with the North Carolina Attorney General's Office in the Public Health and Child Welfare section. I'm honored to be here with you today, and I'm humbled to be presenting at the American Public Health Association annual meeting. I'd like to thank the North Carolina Attorney General's Office, the National Attorneys General Training and Research Institute, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, American Public Health Association, and especially the Partnership for Public Health and the Law Section, who co-sponsored our panel, for providing me with this opportunity. Today, I'm going to be briefly discussing New York City's portion cap rule, or what's also been referred to as the soda ban. And you'll find that the name changes depending on which side of the case you're arguing. So here's my financial disclosure. The following personal financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation existed during the past 12 months. I have no relationships to disclose. And also, here's a quick disclaimer that my remarks today are my own and not representative of my employer. Here's an overview of what I'd like to cover today. I'll talk a little bit about background to the portion cap rule. We'll look at some excerpts of the rule itself, talk a little bit about the litigation. There have been two court decisions so far. We'll talk briefly about the first decision, the second decision, now the status of the current case. Finally, I'll do a little bit of discussion of some analysis, and then lastly, some suggestions for a city or state that might be interested to implement a similar rule. So, background to the rule, what we're first talking about is the obesity epidemic that exists in the United States. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention indicate that obesity rates have risen dramatically and remain high. The CDC is working to reduce obesity in the United States. They've identified five target areas for preventing and reducing obesity, which include, among other things, the decrease in consumption of sugary drinks. Now I'd like to share some graphics. These are actually from, can be found at mikebloomberg.com. These are some graphics that talk a little bit more about sugary drinks. The first graphic that I want to share really shows an increase in the size of containers of sugary beverages over the years. And here are two additional graphics, also can be found at mikebloomberg.com, that I want to share. The first addresses the idea that portion size will drive consumption. And the second discusses the idea, really, that sugary drinks are a significant contributor to the obesity epidemic. So with that brief background information, let's move on to look at the rule itself. And actually, let me skip ahead one. So on May 30th, 2012, New York City's mayor, Michael Bloomberg, proposed a rule prohibiting the sale of sugary beverages in cups or containers larger than 16 ounces at food service establishments, what they call FSEs, in New York City. And on September 13th, 2012, the New York City Board of Health adopted the rule amending Article 81 of New York City's health code by adding Section 81.53. This is an excerpt of the text of the rule. And let me actually scooch back and we'll look at the definition. This is another excerpt from the text of the rule defining sugary beverages as a beverage that is non-alcoholic, sweetened by the manufacturer, has greater than 25 calories per 8 fluid ounces, and does not contain more than 50% milk or milk substitute. And the rule was scheduled to go into effect on March 12, 2012, and violations would have resulted in a $200 fine per inspection. Prior to the rule going into effect on October 12, 2012, the American Beverage Association, among other plaintiffs, filed a declaratory judgment petition in the Supreme Court of the State of New York, County of New York, challenging the rule. You might remember from law school, if you attended, that Supreme Court of New York County is the entry-level, lower-level court. Defendants, respondents include New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, New York City Board of Health, and New York City Health Commissioner. The plaintiffs made a few arguments. First, that the proper legislative process was not followed in the adoption of the rule. Specifically, that this rule should have been addressed by the New York City Council, and this is the separation of powers violation argument. Secondly, they also argued that the rule itself was arbitrary and capricious. And lastly, they talked a lot about Well, they asserted that the rule would impose tens of millions of dollars of costs on companies forced to retool manufacturing plants in order to repackage beverages in 16-ounce bottles. The argument that I focused on and will discuss today is the separation of powers violation argument, whether or not the New York City Board of Health exceeded its authority in adopting the rule. And in making their argument, the plaintiffs relied on an important case in New York called Boreale v. Axelrod. It's a 1980s New York Court of Appeals case. In Boreale v. Axelrod, what was at issue was a smoking rule that prohibited smoking in schools, hospitals, auditoriums, among other places. And that smoking rule was actually adopted by the Public Health Council of New York City, which is a different body than an issue in this case. And again, in that case, the New York Court of Appeals, which is the highest court in New York, found that the Public Health Council had exceeded its authority and held the rule to be invalid. In their decision, the Court of Appeals discussed four coalescing circumstances or factors found to be present in that case that persuaded the court that, quote, the difficult-to-define line between administrative rulemaking and legislative policymaking had been transgressed. The court went on to say, quote, while none of these circumstances standing alone is sufficient to warrant the conclusion that the Public Health Council has usurped the legislative's prerogative, all of these circumstances, when viewed in combination, paint a portrait of an agency that has improperly assumed for itself the open-ended discretion to choose ends which characterizes the elected legislature's role in our system of government. So let's look at the four coalescing circumstances or factors that were outlined in Boreale. First, the first factor asks whether the challenge regulation is based upon concerns not related to the stated purpose of the regulation. For example, is the regulation based on other factors such as economic, political, or social concerns? Second factor asks, was the regulation created on a clean slate, thereby creating its own comprehensive set of rules without the benefit of legislative guidance? The third factor asks, did the regulation intrude upon ongoing legislative debate? In other words, did the regulation address a matter the legislature has discussed, debated, or tried to address prior to this regulation? And lastly, the fourth factor asks, did the regulation require the exercise of expertise or technical competence on behalf of the body passing the legislation? In Boreale, the Court of Appeals found that all four factors were violated. First, the court found that the regulations were laden with exceptions based solely upon economic and social concerns. Specifically, the Public Health Council had expressly excluded or carved out exemptions for the smoking ban for bars, convention centers, and small restaurants. In addition, the Public Health Council in their rule had also allowed for a waiver based on financial hardship, and the court found that these exemptions had no foundation in public health. Second, the court found that the Public Health Council did not merely fill in the details of broad legislation describing the overall policies to be implemented, but rather wrote on a clean slate, creating its own set of rules without legislative guidance. Third, the court found that the New York State Legislature had considered this exact proposal and it had been voted down. And therefore, they concluded that the Public Health Council had acted in an area in which the legislature had repeatedly tried and failed to reach agreement in the face of substantial public debate and lobbying by a variety of interested factions. Fourth, the court concluded that no special expertise in the field of public health was involved in the development of the anti-smoking regulation in that case, but instead that the Public Health Council had drafted a simple code describing the locales in which smoking would be prohibited and providing various exemptions. In the portion cap rule case, plaintiffs argued that all four of the Boreale factors were violated and therefore that the Board of Health had exceeded its authority. And in response, defendants actually first argued that Boreale does not apply, but that even if it does, that none of the four factors were violated. So on March 11th, 2013, the day before the rule was scheduled to go into effect, the New York Supreme Court issued a decision declaring the rule to be invalid. In that decision, the court held that Boreale did apply and concluded that three of the four Boreale factors were violated in this case. Again, therefore, that the Board of Health had exceeded its authority. And the court found that the fourth factor was not violated. They held that the Board of Health had exercised expertise when adopting the rule. And The defendants, respondents, appealed that decision. And on July 30th, 2013, the First Division, Appellate Division of New York Supreme Court, issued a decision that upheld the lower decision, also holding the rule invalid. This time, the court found that all four Boreale factors were violated. And again, held the rule to be invalid as a violation of the principle of separation of powers. So, moving on to the current status of the case, respondents, defendants have appealed again, now to the New York Court of Appeals, again, the highest court in New York State. As I understand it, it's not an automatic appeal, but the appeal was granted recently on October 17, 2013. So, some brief analysis. Based on my review, I would respectfully submit that the court's decisions so far have erred in the analysis of some of their Boreale factors. And I know it sounds a little like I'm hedging my bets here, but I still think that New York City has a 50-50 chance at having the rule upheld. In my opinion, I think there are strong arguments that factors 1 and 4 are not violated in this case. However, when it comes to factors 2 and 3, I think it's a tough call, but the plaintiffs may have stronger arguments there. So when it comes to the first factor, I think the courts have erred in their analysis. Let me address again. The first factor asks whether the challenge regulation is based upon concerns not related to the stated purpose of the regulation. So they're asking, is the regulation based on other factors, such as economic, political, or social concerns? And the stated purpose of the rule, you can find in a memorandum, the Board of Health stated that, quote, the purpose of the amendment is to address the obesity epidemic among the city's residents by limiting the maximum size of sugary beverages sold or provided at the food service establishments. And the amendment itself states that, quote, its intent is to address the supersized trend and reacquaint New Yorkers with smaller portion sizes, leading to a reduction in the consumption of sugary drinks among New York residents. You know, I think the rule is based on the stated public health concerns. And the reason I think the courts may have erred is that they seem to treat any exception as a violation, even though the exemptions in this case, I think, can be distinguished from the exemptions in Boreale. So the smoking rule in Boreale expressly excluded bars and restaurants, and the court determined that those exemptions were not based on public health concerns, but rather on economic concerns or other concerns. And here, one of the exemptions that's raised, for example, is that milk-based beverages are excluded. But again, I think, you know, the respondents and defendants are able to explain that this exception has public health reasons, nutritional reasons for these exemptions that were permitted. In addition, the court seemed to treat respondents' reference to the cost of obesity-related health care in New York City, which is estimated at approximately $4 billion a year, as evidence that the Board of Health balanced public health concerns against economic concerns. However, this is not the type of balancing that was done in Boreale that was ultimately viewed as improper or that should be reserved to the legislature. In Boreale, the Public Health Council settled on a compromise in the rule, providing waivers for financial hardships to businesses that might suffer as a result of the rule's restrictions. There are no waivers for hardship provided in Section 8153, and this rule would apply to all food service establishments located in New York City. So those are some of the reasons why I think the first factor is not violated in this case. And looking, moving on now to the fourth factor. The fourth factor asks, did the regulation require the exercise of expertise or technical competence on behalf of the body passing the legislation? When it comes to the fourth factor, I agree with the lower court, not with the appellate court, and I do think that the Board of Health exercised expertise in the adoption of the rule. This can be especially evidenced by their consideration of the rule, some of their memorandum of the rule post-public hearing. And again, I think the portion cap rule can be distinguished from the rule in Boreale in this situation. The portion cap rule involves defining a sugary beverage and setting a limit for these beverages. And I think this requires that knowledge about nutrition and public health. And it can be distinguished from a rule that, quote, simply prohibited smoking in certain locations in Boreale. In addition, the appellate court seems to get hung up on the idea that the mayor of New York City drafted or came up with this rule, treating that as evidence that the rule did not require expertise on the part of the Board of Health. But it's my understanding that the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene drafted the rule that the mayor announced. So again, just because the mayor announced the rule does not mean that the Board of Health did not exercise expertise in adopting the rule. Now turning to factors 2 and 3. Factor 2 asks, was the regulation created on a clean slate, thereby creating its own comprehensive set of rules without the benefit of legislative guidance? I think it's a tough call on this factor, but I think the courts may have gotten this analysis correct. So even though, as the respondents are arguing, they have this broad authority, a grant of power from the legislature to regulate both chronic disease and food service establishments in New York City, it appears that this rule was still written on a clean slate. There were no direct instructions or requests from legislative body or city council to the Board of Health to implement this type of rule. And so here the Board of Health was not really filling in the details, but they were instead, you know, writing on a clean slate. Lastly, the third factor, I think, again, is another tough call, close call, perhaps ultimately a stronger argument for the plaintiffs. The third factor asks, did the regulation intrude upon ongoing legislative debate? Specifically, did the regulation address a matter the legislature has discussed, debated, or tried to address prior to this regulation? With this factor, the courts determined that because the New York City Council and the New York State Legislature have been working to address the issue of obesity and sugary sweetened beverages in varying ways, they found that the third factor was violated. And I agree, yes, you know, this rule has intruded upon ongoing debate. However, again, I think the facts can be distinguished in this case from the facts in Boreale. My understanding is that the exact rule adopted by the Public Health Council in Boreale had been addressed and directly and failed to pass the New York State Legislature, whereas in this situation, New York City Council and the New York State Legislature have not previously addressed a portion cap rule specifically. So there's still an argument to be made there that perhaps the third factor is not violated. But in terms of the broader argument, you know, has there been legislative debate? I think, yes, there has been legislative debate on this topic. So the plaintiffs may have the upper hand there. In conclusion, I would offer some suggestions from my perspective as an attorney, some simple suggestions to any city or state interested in implementing a rule similar to Section 81.53 in New York City. My first recommendation is wait and see the outcome of this case and learn from New York City. There are lessons to be learned from this case. I don't purport to know them all, but I'm interested to continue and follow and study this case. Secondly, you know, it certainly seems ideal if you can work jointly with an administrative body and legislative body in order to achieve kind of this stronger and more successful regulation. It's my understanding that in some of the other public health rules adopted by the New York City Board of Health, I believe the ban on trans fats and also requiring calorie counts to be posted on menus, I believe those rules were also adopted by the Board of Health, but at the same time incorporated by the New York City Council, and that strengthened them against some of the other challenges they faced. Okay, third, I have to point out that compromise can help advance a cause. Many soda bottles are already packaged in 16.9-ounce containers. That's a 500 milliliter standard size. You'll find, you know, if you take a look at your water bottle even, or any bottle, you'll find that's one of the standard sizes. So it seems practical to compromise and set a maximum limit at least 17 ounces instead of 16. Although it might have caused problems in this case, under the first Boreale factor, it would have weakened petitioner's argument of significant economic harm for requiring them to retool their plants to repackage the bottles for less than 1 ounce in order to comply with the rule. I'm sorry, 0.1 ounce. And lastly, if you can't get your opponents to cooperate with you, seek out new allies. Again, you know, in the course of my research, I've learned that the Barclay Center, it's a new sports arena in Brooklyn, voluntarily complied with Section 8153 ever since they opened, even though the rule, before the rule had gone into effect, and now even though the rule has not gone into effect. So on that positive note, I'll end my speech and say again, thank you so much. I'm so honored and humbled to be here presenting today.